Good morning. Thank you. The talk that I'm going to give today is based on some work that our practice-based research network in Massachusetts has been doing. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Kathleen McVarish and Harold Cox, are hiding back there. Our practice-based research network was funded in 2008 by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and it is directed by Dr. Glenn Mays at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. We thank the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation a lot for funding our practice-based research network. It's been a great experience. For those of you familiar with practice, I'm just going to call it PBRN because it's a little simpler at this point. But the purpose of PBRNs is to bring together public health practitioners and researchers or academics to identify pressing research interests, questions that emerge from the field that we find in the literature, to implement studies and then to translate the findings into practice. Very similar, inspired by principles of community-based participatory research, I would argue. Our network in Massachusetts is comprised of local and state public health leaders. We have representation from the public health associations, and then academics and researchers. And our leading interests, as many as there are amongst us, but our leading interests have been really focused on improving the public health system in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Advocacy, a real strong dedication towards improving the equitable delivery of public health services. And our research network emerges from what we've been calling the Working Group on Regionalization in Massachusetts, and Harold Cox and Kathleen McVarish have been leading the formation of the working group that's been in existence for a few years. And that group has felt strongly that regionalization is a strategy for improving the equitable delivery of services across the state. And one of the reasons for that is that in Massachusetts, we have a unique public health system. For better or for worse, we have 351 cities and towns. We also have 351 boards of health. So where most states are, or their public health system is organized by county, ours is located and organized by the municipal level. While that helps facilitate local engagement in public health service delivery and priority setting, it also really means that there's wide variety in the delivery of services and the funding for those services. In some previous work that we've done, we found there's limited coordination among communities. There's really no consistency in the services or the quality of the services delivered, and very inconsistent standards for the workforce. Layered on top of this, as most states have faced, is budget cuts to our municipal governments that have really impacted. And I think for this, maybe the silver lining, if we can find a silver lining here, is that it's really brought people to the table to think about how do we reorganize some of our municipal services, public health being one of them, so that we can continue offering some basic services to our residents. So our basic, our kind of primary research question is whether or not regionalization will help provide essential public health services to citizens in the Commonwealth. One of our projects, we got a little bit of money from the Practice-Based Research Network grant to catalyze our PBRN. And so our group decided that we would set aside a little bit of that money to start a project. And one of the projects that we wanted to start on was to support planning efforts around regionalization. We knew that we didn't have enough money to actually move them into the implementation phase, but we could support their planning efforts. And we anticipated that a good number of communities were going to start coming to the table to start thinking about how to regionalize public health services. And so our research questions were really, you know, led by them, what process were they going to take to start planning for regionalization? And I'll talk about our research questions in a second. The requirement to apply for a very modest $3,000 was that they needed to serve a population of 50,000 or more, or an area of 150 square miles. So those were the requirements that were set by the Working Group on Regionalization. We strongly encouraged at least 4 to 6 planning meetings, although they could do what they wanted with the money. And it was left up to them to decide who they would bring to the table for planning. And so we selected 3 groups of communities, 3 sets of communities. All are in the western part, midwestern part of the state, which wasn't terribly surprising to us, given that our more rural cities and towns are out in the western part of the state. They tend to do more collaborative work already, and some had started thinking about regionalizing. I'm going to not say too much more, except for the populations range up to from about 1,500 in some of the municipalities, up to the largest city, which was about 30,000, I would say. But it's 3 groups, a total of 20 municipalities. So our questions to them, you know, the condition of funding was that we wanted to know from them what information did they need in order to help them plan to regionalize? What strategies, what planning strategies did they use that worked? And what were the costs, if any, of their planning efforts? And so I'm going to just talk quickly about the 3 approaches. We had no idea, really, how they would approach this work. I made myself available to these 3 sets of communities to provide technical assistance and help out in any way. I've attended all of their planning meetings, and the groups have used me and other members of the steering committee in a number of ways. So for our first group, there is the cluster of 3 communities in red up there. That's an existing regional health district, and their goal was really to think about how to expand that health district to bring in more municipalities. You'll notice that they're not contiguous. They started off contiguous, and one community dropped out, which is one of the reasons why they've reached out to a planning district to help generate some support for sitting at the planning table. But what's interesting about this group is they were also a beta site for the FAB assessment, and they decided that they were going to use the results of the FAB assessment as a spring. It's the Public Health Accreditation Board. I don't want to use too many acronyms, but there is a standard assessment being considered as a way of measuring performance capacity of the local public health departments. So they wanted to use the results of the FAB assessment as a springboard for discussion of identifying their strengths and their gaps. They wanted to review the findings and then think about strategically about, you know, where are their strengths and weaknesses and where, you know, how will they move forward. They engaged a regional planning agency to reach out to partners and to bring to the planning table. They formed a regional advisory committee, and they've started looking into some fiscal and governance options. And they've stalled. I think they sort of started doing some of the logistics, but they didn't really know, I would say, how to move from the FAB assessment into action. And that will come up again in my sort of observation. I'll come back to that in terms of what I think communities might need to get started. But they've said we've got this sort of abstract understanding of our strengths and weaknesses, and we don't really know what to do with them from here. So like many other communities, we've just received some CDC infrastructure dollars, and one of the components of that funding will be to spark or catalyze the formation of regional health districts. So they're sort of in a holding pattern, waiting to see what will happen when the call for proposals come out around for those dollars. The second approach, their goal is to build a regional health district at this point. And their approach early on was to focus on relationship building. Although the communities, the leaders at the table knew each other, the leader of this, I'll call it a coalition or planning group, really felt like we needed to invest some time in relationship building among the public health leaders in those communities. So we did some visioning exercises. What do you envision? You know, what would you like to see for public health in your community? What do you think are the gaps? We identified commonalities in vision, and in the last meeting started identifying some of the challenges to the work. But I would say, you know, really the bulk of their efforts so far has been on relationship building and visioning. I did help them gather through a survey some data looking at their collective funding and staffing and governance structures. And in our last meeting, presented that data back to them, which they found enormously helpful and useful to move outside of thinking of their own budgets and their own governance and thinking collectively, what do we have when we put all of our funding together? What did, you know, where are the similarities in the way we're governed? So that sparked a lot of conversation amongst them. I presented some health data that I could gather from the county health rankings and from what we have called MassChip, which they had never looked at before. So what are the leading indicators or leading causes of death in their communities was interesting for them to look at. So finally, in Region 3, they wanted to expand regional cooperation, maybe a health district, maybe joint projects. They weren't sure from the beginning. But the leader in this community, I would say, started out strong. We need a regional approach. There are very, very small towns in this group. And so we worked together to put together from the very beginning a presentation of local health data, emerging public health threats, some data on the limited capacity within the area to perform public health services. I would say she made an incredibly strong case for regional work and reiterated it over and over and over again in every single meeting. This group agreed to start small and start now. And so by the last meeting, they had decided they were going to come together and they were all going to submit for a little bit of funding to the FDA so they could all have all their inspectors trained in national retail food safety standards. They're starting to work on their governance structure, and they're trying to identify a fiscal lead or agent for their group. So a couple of observations about the process, two big observations about this process that's been very informative for us, I would say. Major infrastructure work shifts are a lot of work, a lot of work. And it's we've heard over and over again, and much to our surprise, that it's very difficult to advocate for change voluntarily. There's not a state mandate to regionalize. And so they are doing this on their own time at this point. Local public health leaders are stretched very thin. It's very difficult to come together and plan and vision when you're sort of sitting in the trenches trying to put out fires on a day-to-day basis. And we don't have good supporting evidence on the benefits of regional service delivery. I think that's an area of need for some more research. Another observation, multiple people need to be involved in the decision-making process. People have different motives. Our town executives, our mayors, our town administrators, you know, their motive is cost savings. And for our public health leaders, it's quality of public health services. People don't want to, you know, while the town executives are ultimately probably going to make the decisions about regionalizing. It's hard to know when to bring them into the conversation until a plan is worked out that will help preserve jobs and budget cuts. These are some common questions and concerns. Again, loss of authority if you regionalize at the local level, big concern. Loss of jobs, loss of capacity, loss of services. Will that happen? That's a big concern. Who do we need to be involved in the decision making, and how do we implement our plans? And mostly, how do we get started? I mean, it's a infrastructure shift that can be very daunting without a mandate to move forward. And so these have been common themes that we've heard over and over again. So finally, I'd just like to close with a few things that our network has learned about this process. One thing that I think as we move forward and other groups want to regionalize across the state, up front, I think it's critical to clarify the roles and responsibilities of public health. Our state mandates are regulatory in nature, by and large, and some stick strictly to the regulations, and others expand to include more prevention and wellness programming, even though they're not mandated. Some pull in the 10 essential services, others do not. So we need to come to a common agreement about what the roles and responsibilities of local public health are. I think that that groups of communities that come together, we need to start with the concrete. I think our experience with the FAB standards, I think that performance standards are incredibly important, especially with accreditation coming down the pike. I think as a starting point, it can paralyze communities to figure out where they need to go from there. I think starting with services, funding, tangible, everyday items that they work with will help get the conversation going. I think moving from concept to concrete as quickly as possible is important. We say regionalization, and that sort of means something, but what does that exactly mean? And are we sharing services? Are we coming under one umbrella? So providing models of regional approaches, people have wanted that from the beginning. Like, what are we talking about here? What am I committing to? Or what are the options that we have? How can we govern ourselves? So having some concrete models to provide immediately can help move the conversation forward. And then breaking the decision-making process down into steps is something that we haven't done, but I think would be a useful tool. Infrastructure change is a long process. So rather than just like have that all float around in our heads, I think we need to start thinking about what are the first steps, decisions that we need to make, and then what are the incremental steps that we need to make to move towards regionalization. And then finally, figuring out who makes decisions for community and when to bring them in. I don't have a great answer for that yet. I think that varies a lot by community and given their history and context and the politics at play within those communities. But it is something that we'll continue to grapple with. So thank you. You can certainly contact Harold or Kathleen or myself if you have any questions about what we're doing around regionalizing and the research that we're doing from that effort.